guy when he has that realization. So please know that I will fucking destroy you if you don't tell me who hurt my daughter, and I will do it gladly, with a smile on my face, because I am done not being there for Silver when she needs me. Holy fucking shit. Cameron's lost his ever-loving mind. He's threatening me to get what he wants, which isn't typically a great plan where I'm concerned. Usually I rebel against threats on principle alone. But Cam...
Dad? Who are you talking to?
I nearly jump out of my skin when I hear Silver's voice in the hallway. Cam leans back, plastering a smile on his face that definitely wasn't there a moment ago. When Silver enters the kitchen, hair a little mussed, cheek red from her pillow, her father looks like he hasn't got a care in the motherfucking world. Silver's eyes light up when she sees me, and a sharp, painful knot tightens in my chest. I'm never going to get used to another human being looking at me like that. Like I deserve all the love and adoration in the world. I'm not worth 3 seconds of this girl's time, and yet somehow she's permitted me to fall head over heels in love with her, and it's just... it's fucking unbelievable.
We're out of those little pimento olives you like,
Cam says, kissing his daughter on the top of her head.
I'm gonna run over to the store and pick some up. If you guys think of anything else you'd like, shoot me a text and let me know. I won't be long.
He scoops up a set of keys from a dish by the back door and lets himself out without another word.
So smooth,
Silver says with a heavy dose of sarcasm.
He's making himself scarce so we can talk.
I spin my half-drunk bottle of beer around, eyes boring into the side of her face. There are more bruises developing under her skin, leaving purple-black shadows that weren't there before when I saw her outside Darhauer's office. My anger is a steel glove, tightening its grip around me. A living, breathing thing, just under the surface of my skin that wants me to lose my cool and start smashing things out of frustration. I can't, though. I need to stay fucking calm, or this is going to be a disaster.
That was nice of him. I say,
we do need to talk. I take a beat to even out my breathing. Only when I think I've got my shit locked down do I permit myself to open my mouth again. Do you have any idea how difficult it is to go through an entire afternoon and half an evening not knowing what happened to someone you care about? To see them hurt and obviously upset and have no idea why, what happened, or who did it to them? She looks down at the kitchen island, hair forming curtains around her face, hiding her remorse.
I'm sorry, Alex. If I told you about what happened in a text or a call, you'd have gone and done something stupid. And I can't have you doing that. If you beat someone or broke something, the consequences would be much more dire for you than they would for anyone else.
Because I'm trailer trash?
She looks up at me with sad, steady eyes.
Because you've already been in trouble before. And some people in this town would love nothing more than to see you sent away, where you'll no longer be a thorn in their sides.
I let my head fall back, stifling a growl. Let's stop pretending, Silver. We both know who did this to you, don't we? This has Jacob Weaving written all over it. Please just tell me what happened. Tell me you're all right. Tell me what you need. I'm going fucking crazy.
Okay, but you have to promise.
No, no more fucking promises. I'd already made my mind up about that one before I left Raleigh this afternoon. It's been murder trying to find a way to bring Weaving to justice, with the constraints Silver set in place blocking me at every turn. I'm not going to tangle myself up in any more restrictions. The time for that has long passed.
Then I can't tell you,
Silver says reluctantly.
I'm going to deal with the situation myself.
No! Pain lashes around my wrist, shooting up my arm as I bring my hand crashing down onto the marble top. I don't want to shout at her. I don't want to be that guy that gets mad when he doesn't get what he wants, but this is just too much. Silver's eyes round out, surprise and shock warring for real estate on her face. You aren't in this alone anymore. This is no longer a secret story of abuse that you have to carry around like poison in your heart, pretending like it's not fucking killing you on the inside, squirreling this shit away. It's fucking toxic. I am fucking here. I fucking love you. I promised you that you would never have to deal with this shit alone, and you're making it impossible for me to keep that promise. What is it, Silver? Do you feel like you're supposed to be able to bear the weight of this all by yourself? Do you think you'll look weak if someone else picks up a weapon and helps you fight a couple of these battles? Because that's not how this kind of thing works anymore. Silver looks like she's walking a fine line between misery and rage. She's shaking, her eyes filled with tears.
Anymore? What's changed, Alex?
Nothing. Those bastards at Raleigh are always going to... You've changed. I've changed. Everything has fucking changed. When someone hurts you, I have to fucking bear it too, because I love you more than I've ever loved anything in my entire miserable fucking life. You're my fucking heart and my soul, and I will defend those two things with my own goddamn life. I can't bear for anything to happen to you. I can't see you hurt and not feel it. I can't see you suffer and not have something wither and die inside me. I can't see you wounded and not feel like I'm fucking failing you. If you're asking me not to react to this, you're asking me not to care about you anymore. You're asking me to cut the damn wires to my fucking heart, and I cannot, will not do that. She isn't breathing. She's frozen in place, trembling. Her eyes brimming over as she stares at the center of my chest, like her gaze can pierce through the material of my shirt, through my skin, through bone and muscle, until she's looking upon the very organ I just mentioned. I hope she can see it. I hope she can see how fucking broken and worn it is, that it's held together with string and fucking duct tape. I hope that she can see how much it's fucking hurting right now.
It's hard admitting that I need help,
she whispers under her breath.
I've never had to do it before. Maybe I'm too proud. But how am I supposed to tell you difficult things like this when I have no assurances that you aren't going to do something that will inevitably end up in you being taken away from me?
You trust me. That's how. I just found you, Argento. I'm hot-tempered and reactive, but I'm also really fucking smart. I'll never jeopardize us. Nothing is more important to me. A single tear streaks down her cheek, and pain knifes into my chest. I can't fucking bear to see her cry. It's harrowing.
You're right. You do already know who did this,
she says, gesturing to the bruising at her throat and her cheek. She seems so dejected.
I'm not going to say his name out loud.
I blow out a breath down my nose. It may be freezing outside, but there's a desert wind howling around inside my head right now, growing hotter and hotter as the seconds pass, scorching everything in its path to cinders and ash. Was he alone? I grind out. Or did he have someone with him?
Alone, Silver mutters. We were alone.
My stomach revolts, nausea climbing up the back of my throat, making my mouth sweat. Why did he do it?
I don't know. I made him angry. Why does Jake do anything? He tried to kiss me. He kept smashing the back of my head against the wall.
Oh, fucking no, he did not.
Then he tried to drag me into the boys' locker rooms, and I just snapped. I punched him. I kept on punching him until he let me go. Next thing I knew, he was on the ground, and I was on top of him, and my hands were bleeding. I couldn't stop hitting him. I think I broke his nose.
I root myself through the kitchen floor, mentally sending out anchors down into the basement, down through the house's foundations, deep into the frozen earth below us. I fix myself in place so that I can barely move a muscle, and it takes every ounce of strength that I possess. I'm going to fucking kill him. I'm going to fucking skin the bastard alive. He's going to die screaming, and I'm going to relish every last second of it. I exhale out a shaky breath, pressing down the dark thoughts that rear up inside my mind, filing them away to be dealt with later, when I don't need to prove to the girl I love just how reasonable and calm I can be. I ask the only important questions that matter in this moment. Are you okay, Argento? What can I do? Silver lifts her chin, steel forming in her eyes. With a swipe of her hands, she bats her tears away. She's a complex creature, this one, but I know how the gears and cogs turn inside of her. She and I are very much alike. She's hurting, and she's afraid, but I can't treat her that way. I can't walk around the kitchen island and hug her. Not right now. Maybe in an hour or so, I'll be able to take her into my arms and press her to me. I'll be able to make her feel safe. If I so much as think about coddling her now, her hurt and her fear will take a turn for the worse. She'll lash out in a destructive way, and that won't help. Against my own better judgment, I stand fast and let her breathe.
I'm okay. A little sore, but I'll live. If you want to help, then maybe we could all just act normal. Just have a nice night and make some food. I don't want to think about it anymore. Is that okay?
Not thinking about it anymore is tantamount to burying your head in the sand, but things are tenuous right now, and Silver needs time to process things. After a long moment, staring into her face, I give her what she wants.
Fine. But if I find out you're one of those monsters who put pineapple on their pizza, I'm gonna have to reassess this entire relationship. Some things just can't be overlooked.
She smiles, and it's like the storm brewing inside the kitchen has just broken without ever reaching its climax. I'm relieved. I'm able to pretend, to joke and to laugh, to not look at the bruises she's wearing and go to DEFCON 1. I'm able to do all of this because I got really fucking good at hiding my feelings back when I lived with Gary fucking Quincy, and I can stow my emotions when I really have to. But inside, I'm a fucking mess. Cam returns, and the evening continues like nothing at all is out of the ordinary. The three of us laugh and shoot subtle digs at one another as we construct our food. As we eat, we talk about light things, unimportant things. I ask Silver if she wants to come and see Dread Station 2 with me and Ben on Friday. It's almost as if tonight is a normal night, same as any other, and we're all having a great time. The underlying, niggling current of tension in the Parisi household, however, is studiously ignored, but felt by all. This is not okay. This is not okay. This is not okay. At just after 10, Silver pushes her plate away groaning and looks at her dad.
Alex is staying the night?
She poses it as a statement, but really it's a question. Cam opens his mouth, looking down at his own empty plate, but I speak before he has a chance. I actually have to get back to Salt and Ash. There are a couple things I have to take care of back at the trailer.
Yeah, I have to Google a few new interesting torture methods and sharpen my fucking throwing knives.
Silver looks disappointed, but I think she's still exhausted from the nightmare of a day she's had. Cam leaves us alone while I say goodnight to her at the bottom of the stairs. If you need me, text me and I'll come running, I whisper into her hair. Now's the time for that hug. I pull her into the circle of my arms, and the righteous vengeance I've been tamping down all evening roars in my ears, deafeningly loud. She feels so fragile, pressed up against my chest. So small. There's barely anything to her. The thought of Jacob Weaving laying his hands on her when she seems so vulnerable with her head nestled into me, below the crook of my chin, makes me want to raise all of Raleigh to the ground. I have a meeting with the social worker first thing tomorrow morning, but I'll see you at school. Silver tips her head back and I kiss her deeply, stroking my thumbs over her cheeks. It takes more willpower than I possess to let her go. It's insanely hard not to follow up the stairs behind her, but somehow I find the strength to do it. I don't leave immediately. I wait at the foot of the stairs until I hear the door to her bedroom click closed. Then I head straight for Cameron's office. I enter without knocking. The guy's standing in front of his imposing desk, leaning against the polished oak, his hands driven deep into his pockets. Obviously, he was expecting me.
Well?
He asks. I set my jaw, flaring my nostrils. This is a bad idea. It's a really bad fucking idea, but I don't really care anymore. It has to be done. The guy's name is Jacob Weaving, and don't worry, you aren't going to be the only one doing the hurting. We have until Friday night to make him suffer, and there's a bag of tricks in the trunk of my car that'll make the job easy. 18. Alex.
Everything seems to be in order. I'm impressed that the place is so clean and tidy.
Maeve Bishop, my official social worker, stalks around the trailer like she's inspecting a prison cell, and she's pleasantly surprised by the conditions. I grunt from where I'm slumped in my seat on the couch, waiting for her to sign off on her never-ending paperwork so I can get the hell out of here. I'm not an idiot, Maeve. I do know how to wash dishes and tidy up after myself. She gives me a reproving look over the top of her clipboard. The infernal fucking clipboard. I'm sick to death of the sight of them. For years, I've had them brandished at me like they give the person holding them some sort of power over me.
No need to get pissy, Maeve rebukes. Just doing my job. You know, you should have told us you weren't living with Montgomery anymore. You should be thankful they're signing off on your new living arrangements at all. It's highly irregular that they'd let a teenager, still in school, live alone, let alone someone with your track record for
anarchy.
Issues with authority.
I smirk at that. I suppose she's right. She wanders through to the kitchen again, checking for the third fucking time that the stove actually ignites and hot water comes out of the tap when she turns it on.
Not long now, anyway, Maeve calls to me. It'll be your birthday soon, and I won't have to pay you any more of these visits.
You're right. Don't I fucking know it. My birthday is coming up soon. 5 months and change. April 27th. That piece of shit Gary Quincy always used to tell me that they must have gotten my date of birth wrong by a month. He loved to sneer that I was the biggest April Fool's joke of all.
I visited Ben last week,
she says, walking back into the living room.
He told me Jackie was taking him on vacation to Hawaii after Thanksgiving. That'll be nice for him, don't you think? She's going to homeschool him there until after Christmas. Can't remember the last time I managed to get away.
I just stare at her blankly. Jackie and I are hardly on great terms, but we do communicate from time to time about Ben's well-being. She hasn't mentioned that she's planning on taking him to Hawaii. She sure as shit hasn't told me she was taking him away for 6 fucking weeks. It's supposed to be my year to take Ben on Christmas Day. Something sour and cold pinches in my chest. No fucking way. Maeve perches herself on the edge of the coffee table, sighing deeply. She was bright and sunny a second ago, telling me how great it is that Ben's being taken away for the holidays. But now her mask has slipped, revealing the truth behind it. She knew I was going to react badly to this news.
Come on, Alex. You don't need to cause a stink. Think of Ben. 6 weeks in the sun, getting to play on the beach every day. Jackie said she'd sign him up for surfing lessons. Regular kids with regular families aren't lucky enough to get a vacation like that these days. For a kid in foster care, it's basically unheard of. Can you imagine any of your old foster carers shelling out to treat you like that?
No, I answer stiffly. They were all too busy trying to burn me with their cigarettes. Maeve's a good coordinator, and she's great at filing her paperwork. She's not very good at the emotional side of her job, though. She gets uncomfortable when people like me tell her the raw, unadulterated, bare facts of life. If she could have it her way, she'd spend her days believing that kids placed in the care system are fussed and adored over like cute little puppies, and nothing bad ever happens to them. Idealists should never be placed in roles where society will probably let them down. Eventually, Maeve will be so jaded by the things she sees and hears in this job of hers that she'll probably end up moving to a cabin in the woods and she'll forsake humanity altogether. Or it'll all get to her so badly she'll end up snapping and killing someone. She pulls on a tiny thread that's worked free from the hem of her pencil skirt.
Look, okay. Jackie asked me to tell you about Hawaii. I told her I thought it would be better if it came from her, but she was worried about you causing a scene when you take him out on Friday. She said in exchange for Christmas, you can have Ben for Easter.
I'll already be Ben's legal guardian by Easter, and fuck Easter anyway. Why would she try and trade Christmas for Easter? Some bullshit religious holiday.
Christmas is a religious holiday.
I give her an arctic look. Don't pull that shit. Christmas is about presents, candy, and food to kids these days. It's special. Easter's just a week off in the middle of the fucking semester. Maeve splays her hands. She looks remorseful, but she isn't going to do anything about this shitty situation. I already know what she's going to tell me. I stare up at the popcorn ceiling while she spews out the usual bullshit lines.
Alex, you can accept this gracefully or you can create problems. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter how you take it. You are entitled to spend time with your brother, but when is entirely up to Jackie. She's Ben's legal guardian, and if she wants to take him on vacation for 6 weeks, then there's absolutely nothing you can do to stop her. My recommendation?
Let me guess. Lie down like a little bitch and take it. Let Jackie walk all over me. Maeve is not impressed.
If you're still dead set on trying to get custody of your brother, then let Jackie have this one. If you act like a mature adult instead of throwing a temper tantrum, then that can only reflect well on you when the time comes to present your case before the family law court.
I glare at the side of her head. Why do you people keep on saying shit like that?
Like what?
If I'm still determined on taking Ben. There is no if here. It's happening. Maeve takes a deep breath. She opens her mouth, about to say something, but then she stops herself short. Her words seem to have upped and left her. Her gaze dips, her eyes settling on the record player on the other side of the room.
All right, Alex. This is probably the dumbest thing I will ever do in my entire career, but you've convinced me. I'll help you get your application together for custody of Ben. I'll do whatever I can to make sure this works out for you. If you don't lose your mind over this Hawaii thing.
I study her, searching for the lie. She's not supposed to get involved with things like that. She's certainly not supposed to help me. I can't find the deception in her eyes, though. As far as I can see, she's telling the truth. I may not like Maeve very much. I may not think she's right for her job. But that doesn't mean I don't respect her. Like I said, she's a great coordinator, and she can file a fucking form like no one else. She was the one who kept me out of prison after the whole Gary Quincy exhumation and subsequent desecration incident. If she says she'll help me put together my case, then my chances of being awarded custody of Ben just went from 35% to a solid 70%. That's a significant improvement in odds. Why? Why would you do that for me? Maeve shrugs half-heartedly, a weary look on her face.
Well, you are turning 18 soon. Once that birthday rolls around, everything changes, doesn't it? You'll be an adult, and I get the feeling you're going to need the responsibility of looking after Ben to keep you on the straight and narrow.
Even though she doesn't say it, I hear what she's really implying. She thinks the responsibility of looking after Ben will be the only thing that keeps me out of fucking prison. I haven't said shit to Maeve about Silver. A girlfriend might complicate things where CPS are concerned. But it isn't just the prospect of taking care of Ben that's keeping me on the straight and narrow now. I have her to think about, too.
I need to get moving, Maeve says, picking up her purse from where she dumped it on the end of the couch when she arrived. She gets up slowly, heading for the door. I'm supposed to file this paperwork by the end of the week.
She holds her clipboard, loaded with her secret forms, aloft in the air.
You know what would look really good on this form, though, Alex?
What?
A better address, with a separate bedroom for a little boy to sleep in every once in a while.
She wants me to get a new place? I laugh quietly at the impossibility of such a suggestion. Do you know how hard it is to find a reasonably priced two-bedroom apartment in Raleigh, Maeve? They don't exist. You're either looking at a five-bedroom mansion or a rat-infested studio apartment overlooking a dumpster-lined alleyway behind a bar. She stands in the doorway with the door cracked. A rush of freezing cold air blasts the side of the trailer and comes charging in like an uninvited guest. Maeve's teeth are chattering together when she says,
"Really? 'Cause I seem to recall seeing a pretty perfect spot advertised in the window of the hardware store this morning when I dropped by. The apartment above the actual hardware store, I believe, and the rent was pretty reasonable. Only $900, including utilities.
She's got to know about my little sideline with Monty. She'd hardly be saying $900 a month is a reasonable amount of money to spend on rent to a teenager with a part-time job if she wasn't.
If you've got some money set aside, I'd recommend calling in there and putting a deposit down on the place as soon as possible. I doubt it'll be available for long.
And why the hell would they rent the place to me in the first place? I grumble.
Because Harry was a friend of my father's?
Maeve says lightly.
And he's doing me a favor?
She steps through the doorway and out of the trailer, but she pauses there on the step.
You've got one chance at this, Alessandro. Just one. Please don't fuck it up, or I'm gonna look like a complete moron, okay?
Begrudgingly, I give her a military salute.
Oh, God. This really is a bad idea, isn't it? Just get your ass to school, Alex, and don't let me down.
The trailer almost seems to shrink when Maeve slams the door closed behind her.
19. Silver. Raleigh is one of the few schools in the entire state that breaks for a full week over Thanksgiving. There are still 3 days left before that break begins, though. Dad tells me over breakfast on Wednesday morning that I can stay home if I'm not feeling well, but I decline his invitation to play hooky, determined not to be chased out of school by that evil little limp-dicked prick. Dad holds a hand to my forehead, miming out the act of taking my temperature.
I don't know, kiddo. Your head feels weird.
I don't have a temperature, Dad.
I didn't say it felt hot. I said weird. If you stay home today, at least, we can do a drive-by on your mom's new pad and egg the place. Sounds like fun, no?
Dad!
What? It's supposed to rain later on this afternoon. The mess will probably wash away before she even comes home and notices it.
I give him a wry look as I shove my notepad into my backpack. Then what would even be the point?
Because you would know that we'd done it, and I would know that we'd done it. And it would make me feel good.
Didn't have you pegged as the petty type, Father, I say teasingly. He hasn't mentioned Mom much at all lately. He hasn't seemed angry either. Not about her, anyway. It's a little saddening to hear him joke about stuff like this, though. He is joking. I can hear it in his voice and see it in his eyes, but there's always an element of truth to this kind of thing. He's still hurting, which is totally understandable. They were together for 23 years, for crying out loud. That's a long time to get used to someone always being there, no matter what. A hole the size of the one Mom ripped open in Dad's life is going to be noticeable, regardless of how mad at her he might be. With my backpack now hanging from my shoulder, my feet shoved into my shoes, and the keys to the Nova in my hand, I'm just about ready to leave for school. I pause for a beat in the kitchen, though, leaning my elbows against the breakfast bar, standing next to Dad as he skims over the morning news on his laptop. This isn't a break, is it? Between you and Mom? It's final. You guys aren't planning on getting back together, are you? Dad slowly closes the laptop, spinning his bar stool around to face me.
I don't know. I don't know anything anymore. I used to think I had everything figured out, but then this happens and I don't even know the answers to the simplest questions. I don't even know what I want to happen, kiddo. The only thing I know is that this house feels much bigger than it used to now. And sometimes I want to drive by your mother's new pad and egg the place. Beyond that, everything's far too complicated to even think about.
So depressing. I leave, wishing I could make everything easier for him. Not just the Mom stuff, but my shit, too. He'd seethed inside Darhauer's office yesterday when I lied and claimed I'd fallen and hit my head. Fucking seethed. He'd also been hurt, and I hate that I did that to him. Most of all, I'm sick to death of worrying him all the time. At school, everyone's buzzing about me being frog-marched to Darhauer's office yesterday, and it quickly becomes clear why. I'm being expelled. I'm being transferred to a military school for girls. I'm sick, and Darhauer didn't want the other students to see me collapsing in the halls. Someone caught me laying into the notice board outside the gym with my fists, having some sort of psychotic break. The gossip is rife. No one knows the truth, though. How would they ever suspect that I would have fought back against Jacob Weaving and actually left a mark? It's such an unlikely scenario that I don't blame anyone for overlooking it. With Alex's early meeting with his social worker, he couldn't give me a ride this morning. I'm sorting through the books in my locker, trying to track down my English lit textbook, when I sense the presence on the other side of my locker door. Alex promised to come find me as soon as he arrived at school, so I assume it's him. Who else would it be? I glance down, prepared to see his white Adidas sneakers on his feet, his ankles casually crossed as he leans against the wall of lockers beside me, waiting for me to close the door and finally look at him. But the shoes I see there aren't Alex's. No way, no how. He might have had a meeting with the social worker this morning, but I know my boyfriend well. He wouldn't be cut dead wearing a pair of brown, polished leather shoes. Sensible shoes. And khakis? Absolutely, categorically, no fucking way. I slammed the locked door closed, my hackles up. If someone wants to fuck with me this morning, then they're really going to wish they hadn't. However, standing there, waiting politely for me to notice him, is an unfamiliar face. A guy with dark hair, cropped close and swept back in a very clean, almost military cut. He's wearing a white button-down shirt, so well ironed that there isn't a single wrinkle in sight. The record bag over his shoulder is brown leather to match his shoes. Everything about him looks clean and wholesome. I'm almost surprised there isn't a little black name tag over his left breast pocket informing me that he's a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and would I like to take a moment of my busy day to talk about our Lord and Savior? The guy breaks out into an unnaturally wide smile.
Silver.
He says my name like it's the answer to a question, though what the question might have been, I have no idea. I find out almost immediately, though.
The girl who tamed Alessandro Moretti, the guy says, tipping his head to one side. Is Silver your real name or a nickname?
I clutch my books tight to my chest. I'm sorry. You are... I didn't realize we had another new student. His broad smile transforms, adopting a more sinister edge, at odds with his missionary attire.
If only Raleigh High knew how lucky it was, he muses. Alex and myself in the same year? I'm sure things around here are about to get much, much more interesting. I've already heard Alex got himself shot taking down a gunman in the library. He's always been a bit of a do-gooder, but that really is taking the piss.
Do-gooder? What person in their right minds would call Alex a do-gooder? You know Alex? This guy doesn't look like the kind of person Alex would hang around with outside of school, either. The hair, the clothes, the guy's stiff, rigid posture makes him look like he's got a stick shoved 3 feet up his ass. He rolls his eyes, pretending to remember his manners.
Apologies. I don't know where my head's at today. I'm Xander. Xander Hawkins. Alex and I go way back. It was a real nice surprise to find out he was a student here when I registered. Always nice to see at least one familiar face when you find yourself in strange new surroundings.
There's definitely something off about this guy. It's not the clothes or his crew cut or the stiff, off-kilter way he speaks. It's all of it, combined together, that just feels wrong, like an act. With so many months spent on the peripheries of the school, absolutely no one daring or stupid enough to talk to me, I spent a lot of time watching people. Wasn't like I had anything better to do. After a while, I got really good at understanding how people worked, what made them tick, how their body language was often a precursor to their actions, giving away what they were going to do next. This Xander Hawkins guy doesn't seem to have any body language. He's reined in so tight, I get the feeling he's counting out each time he blinks inside a minute to make sure it's not out of the ordinary. Whatever this is, this bizarre charade he's acting out, he's faking it.
You went to Bellingham then.
I squint at him, trying to place him there. The Roughnecks have played against the Braves more times than I can count. As a member of the Sirens, I visited the Bellingham school campus whenever we had an away game, and I never knew what to make of the place. The building itself is way older than Raleigh, stone-built, solid, with creeping vines and ivy snaking up the walls. Stained glass windows everywhere, throwing bolts of color up the walls of the high-ceilinged hallways. The place looks like something out of a gothic nightmare. Half the students in attendance at Bellingham are from rich, well-to-do families and have their noses permanently stuck up in the air. The other half, let's just say they're from a lower socioeconomic tax bracket, and their noses are usually firmly glued to a Coke mirror. Despite how he's dressed right now, I'm guessing Xander hails from the latter demographic.
Actually, no, Xander says. His eyes are burning into my skin in a really weird way.
He's studying me so intensely that his scrutiny is almost unbearable.
Alex and I know each other from a different institution.
I don't understand. A different institution. Oh. He knows Alex from juvenile detention. Xander grins mischievously when he sees the realization dawn on my face.
Yeah, nice vacation spot, he says airily. Me and your boy had some good times. He isn't beaten on you, is he?
I'm sorry? Xander points to his face, gesturing to his jaw and neck.
Quite the bruise collection you've got going on there. Looks pretty gnarly. I never thought Moretti'd raise a fist to a girl, but I guess you never know.
I cover my jaw self-consciously, arranging the collar of the thick cable-knit sweater I picked out of my closet this morning, higher around my neck. Jesus, no! Alex would never hurt me. Xander seems to think about this. He seems to think a lot before he opens his mouth. I get the feeling that a word doesn't make it past Xander Hawkins' lips without having been thoroughly vetted and designed for a specific purpose first.
Then there's someone in Raleigh who probably ought to be walking around with an armed detail right now, he observes. Alex is pretty mellow most of the time, until he really isn't.
Alex knows I'm handling it, I tell him. My voice drips with ice. I don't know why, but I don't think I like this guy. A thick silence falls over the hallway. Takes a moment for me to notice it over the beating of my blood in my ears. Xander's little disguise slips for a second, amusement burning off him like warmth from a flame as he looks at something over my shoulder, his eyes tracking something as it approaches. I'm unable to resist. I turn and look. The crowded hallway splits apart, everyone making room for Jacob as he makes his way toward his locker. His head is held high, defiance and anger roiling in his eyes, daring anyone to mention the fact that he's got a split lip, a black eye, a deep cut above his right cheekbone, and a broken fucking nose.
Holy shit, Xander mutters under his breath. Someone must have taken a tire iron to that poor fucker's face.
No, I try not to smile, but my smug levels are almost off the charts. I'm pretty sure it was just their fists.
The fuck are you all staring at?
Jacob's roar echoes down the hall, startling Abigail Whitley, who just so happens to be standing closest to him.
I got tackled in football practice. Big fucking deal. Let's all just mind our own fucking business and get on with the day.
No one questions him. No one asks how he took so much damage to his face with one bad tackle. No one dares to refute his story. The king has spoken. Jake always makes a point of leaning against his locker each morning, leering at me and making lewd, disgusting comments about me to his dumbass football buddies. But not this morning. He doesn't even glance in my direction as he rummages in his locker, head down, then snatches his backpack up from the ground and scurries off to class.
Well, well, I'm pretty good at math, but I just tried to multiply 5'6" against 6'3", and the numbers just won't seem to add up. Seeing is believing, though, right?
When I spin back and face Xander, the sardonic look on his face says it all. The bruises on my neck, jaw, and hands, coupled with the mess that was once Jacob Weaving's perfect fucking face, tells a tall tale. One that's not so easy to wrap your head around. Xander's figured it out in no time at all, though.
You really did handle it, didn't you?
He says, laughing. Yeah, I guess I did. And I'll keep on handling it for as long as I need to. Alex doesn't have to worry about me. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to get to class. Xander Hawkins grins devilishly, stepping to one side so I can get past him.
Of course. Heaven forbid I make you late.
I forget all about Xander Hawkins the moment I lay eyes on Alex in AP Physics. He very rarely smiles inside the walls of Raleigh, choosing to maintain his blank, indifferent exterior in front of the other students, but he treats me to the smallest hint of one as he weaves his way between the desks and slumps himself down into the chair beside me on the back row. He smells like winter, like fresh pine needles and the cold and the color green. As always, my insides do strange things when he locks eyes with me, and I feel myself come alive. His dark, wavy hair is tumbled from the wind, and his cheeks are flushed, telling me that he just came in from the cold. When he takes his leather jacket off and slings it over the back of his chair, I can't tear my eyes away from his bare arms, covered in ink, strong and corded with muscle. I flush when I remember what it feels like to grab hold of those shoulders of his and cling on to him while he fucks me. He looks at me, well, catches me openly staring at him, actually, and his small smile widens just a little. His eyes dip to my neck, hidden beneath my sweater, but he doesn't say a word about what happened yesterday. I could kiss him for avoiding the topic. I don't want to talk about it. From here on out, I don't want a thing Jacob Weaving does to ever mar the time I get to spend with Alex. His dark eyebrow forms a crooked arch.
"What's got you looking so red in the face?"
he whispers. Like raw silk, his voice is that perfect combination of rough and smooth that makes my skin break out in goosebumps. "My red face has absolutely nothing to do with you." My response is mild, seemingly uninterested, but Alex chuckles ominously under his breath. He doesn't believe me for one goddamn second. "You seem like you're in a good mood," I tell him. "Your meeting went well?"
"It did. Jesus, you're squirming in your seat like you need a good fucking, Argento. If I'm not responsible for all the fidgeting, then I'm gonna have to find the guy who got under your skin this morning and murder the fuck out of him."
Well, shit. The classroom's full of other students, all within earshot, and Alex hasn't muted his volume any. Did anyone else just hear him say that? I can't tell. If they did, then no one's stupid enough to turn around and gawp at him. They all know better. My face is really on fire now, though. "Oh my God, Alex, keep it down." He's utterly deadpan.
"My voice or my dick?"
"Your voice! Lord, I must be a frightening shade of purple." I knew he'd try to be cool about the fact that Jake pinned me by my throat against a wall. I told him that was what I needed, and I'm so glad he listened. But I also assumed he was going to be moody and surly today. This version of Alex, it almost seems carefree. Happy, as if he's just decided to stop worrying about all of it. Honestly, I'm too relieved to be offended that he doesn't seem all that bothered by what happened. Maybe this won't end up being a big deal after all.
"Good," he whispers. At least he's trying to be quieter. "'Cause there's no way my dick's gonna behave itself. That thing is well beyond my control. I'm lightheaded 24/7 these days. Most of my blood now lives in my cock because of you."
Fuck me. He's in a really good mood. He looks at me intently, stripping me down, focusing on my mouth, and I realize that I want him. Right here, right now. So bad that it almost hurts. And from the pleased smirk on his face, apparently he knows it.
"All right, reprobates,"
a voice calls from the front of the class. Mr. French has arrived while I was staring hungrily at Alex. He stands at the front of the class in front of a television that he must have wheeled into the classroom with him.
"You'll be glad to know I am massively behind on all of my paperwork, so I have a treat for you today. You're going to be watching a documentary about rocketry, kindly made by the mathematicians at NASA, while I sit in the teacher's lounge and finish up some admin. It's very dark and potentially boring, but I'd encourage you to pay close attention. You're going to be writing a 1,000-word essay on the finer details of this documentary's contents, and I'm expecting some mind-blowing work from you all. Be warned, my friends, this is rocket science."
A chorus of deep groans go up around the class, but Mr. French pointedly ignores every last one of us. All of us except me, that is. He gives me a coolly appraising glance as his eyes sweep over his students' faces.
"I expect you all to behave yourselves. That means no talking, no note passing, and absolutely no fighting."
Ha! Does he think I'll leap up out of my chair the moment he leaves and start throwing punches? If he had any sense, he would know I only lash out at others when they're threatening to penetrate me against my will. We all wait in grim silence as he cues up the documentary on the television screen. A long time ago, I would have been excited by the prospect of an hour in the dark, watching a movie about how rockets are built. Now, I'm more interested in an hour in the dark next to Alessandro Moretti. Mr. French sets a baby monitor down on his desk, casting a warning glare over his shoulder.
"I'd love to think I could trust you all not to act like a bunch of demented, hormone-riddled baboons, but sadly, I know better. This thing is the Rolls-Royce of baby monitors. I can hear my son fart from 50 paces with this thing, so don't even think about screwing around. I'll be back to check on you in half an hour. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy the majesty of physics. Take notes."
He hits play, then turns out the lights as he exits the classroom. One of the Apollo mission rockets appears on the screen, and Alex's hand closes around the leg of my desk, pulling it closer to his own. I have to quickly shift my legs in order to shunt my chair over with the desk at the same time.
What are you playing at, Moretti? I hiss between my teeth.
Just getting comfortable.
He's sitting at the desk I always claimed for myself, back before he showed up here and stole it. The same desk I dumped my bag on top of the day I met him and spoke to him properly for the first time. We're tucked away in the back corner of the class, where no one can see what we're up to in the dark. Sure, there are another two people sitting to my left, and there are a full row of students in front of us, too. But no one bothered to turn around to see what we were up to, as my chair legs scraped the floor just now. We are, for all intents and purposes, invisible.
Put this over your legs,
Alex commands. He hands me his leather jacket underneath my desk. Why? I take it, doing as he instructed, a little nonplussed. It's freezing outside, but Darhauer doesn't skimp on the energy bill inside the school. The classroom's perhaps a little too warm right now.
No questions, Alex replies.
A moment later, I feel his hand sliding up my thigh beneath his jacket, and it all becomes clear.
Oh my God, Alex, what the hell?
He drapes his arm around my shoulders, drawing me close to him.
Shh, Argento. Sit back and enjoy the majesty of physics.
His fingers work quickly at the button on my jeans. The Apollo rocket on the screen begins its takeoff sequences, its boosters roaring loudly out of the television speakers, masking the sound of my fly being unzipped. He cannot be serious right now. He cannot be about to do what I think he's going to do. My mind goes blank as his hand slips down below my waistband, inside the thin material of my panties. Oh, holy fucking shit. I catch my bottom lip between my teeth, holding back a startled breath as Alex's fingers deftly work their way down between my legs, searching out and finding my clit. I look over at the guy sitting next to my left. Gareth Foster is staring intently at the screen, tapping a pen against his notepad, completely oblivious to the fact that the girl sitting next to him is getting her pussy stroked. Alex rests his chin on my shoulder, angling himself so that he's facing me in his seat.
Relax, Argento. No one cares what we're up to.
Alex, this is...
God, he sweeps his fingers up, flicking them over my clit, and I forget how to fucking speak. It's one thing fooling around pawing at each other like sex-crazed animals up against a brick wall outside Harrison's Home Hardware. But the streets were deserted then. There hadn't been a soul in sight. There was no one in the music room either. Sure, we ran the risk of getting caught, but it was a small risk. There are 20 other people in this room right now. The risk of getting caught is massive.
Alex,
either he doesn't hear the pleading note in my whispered voice, or he just doesn't heed it. He presses forward, sliding his hand further down inside my jeans, and groans breathlessly when he discovers how wet I am. He presses his lips up against the shell of my ear and mouths a string of words that nearly make me come on the spot.
I want your pussy on my tongue, dolcezza.
I know perfectly well that he'd drop down onto his knees underneath our desks and get to work if I'd let him. I wriggle against his hand, unable to escape the pressure building between my legs. Alex knows exactly how to touch me. The small, tight circles he rubs against my pussy are designed to make me squirm, and they're doing their job perfectly. I feel like I'm floating up out of my chair and being driven down into it at the same time. This is too much. Too much. Mr. French won't just escort us in to see Darhauer if we get caught. This kind of public indecency is usually dealt with by law enforcement. I can't bring myself to really care, though, as Alex dips his fingers inside of me for the first time and I slide down in my chair, my hips angling themselves forward of their own accord, giving Alex more space to move his hand. I can feel him grinning against my cheek.
Dirty silver, he whispers. You're staring at that television screen very hard. Are you finding this an educational experience?
Jesus, fucking.
I grab hold of the edge of my desk, bracing myself and holding myself in place at the same time. With Alex's black jacket covering everything that he's doing, no one can see what's going on beneath the leather. But if I start flailing my legs all over the place, then people are going to be able to guess.
You should stop,
I say softly. If you make me come, His question is a low growl in my ear. Someone will notice. I cut myself off, blocking off my throat entirely, as Alex angles his fingers upward, stroking them against a spot inside me that makes flashes of color burst in my vision. He isn't fucking around. It doesn't matter how hard I protest or how frantically I tell him he should stop. He means to make me come at the back of this classroom, and nothing I say is going to deter him. If I really, really want him to stop, I'm going to have to grab his hand and physically drag it out of my pants. I close my hand around his wrist, preparing to do just that, but then I falter. Fuck, it feels so fucking good. Alex fastens his teeth onto my shoulder, biting down playfully through my t-shirt, nowhere near as hard as I made him bite me in the guest room at home. But the effect that small spike of pain has on me is instant and dizzying. My head rocks back, my mouth falling open.
God, you're so fucking beautiful, Argento.
His low, rasping voice is hypnotic. I lose myself altogether as he continues to speak to me, barely loud enough to be heard.
I want my dick inside you so fucking bad right now. Shh, don't make a sound. Don't move. You need this, don't you? You're hungry. Don't worry, I got you. Let me fuck this out of you with my fingers. Let me make you feel good.
White flares of light chase across my eyes as he pumps his hand quicker between my legs. I'm so wet, I can actually smell myself on him as he moves faster, circling the pad of his thumb over the slick, tight knot of my clit. Combined with his fingers pulsing and surging inside me, it feels as though he's lit an eternal fire in the very center of my core, and it will never fucking go out.
You're getting tighter, Argento. Jesus Christ, Alex murmurs. Stay with me. Won't be long now, I promise. I've got you. Hold your breath. Hold it. Don't make a fucking sound. Let it come. Let it come.
I want to scream. I want to buck against his hand and grind myself into his palm. I can't, though. I can't move an inch. If I even allow myself to breathe, I'm going to make some sort of desperate, mindless sound that will let everyone know that I'm teetering on the edge of an orgasm.
Soak my hand, dolcezza. Come on, do it. I want you all over my fingers. Come for me. Come. Come.
This is an order I cannot disobey. It's too late. There's no clawing my way back up this cliff face toward sanity. I'm already stumbling, tripping, tumbling headfirst into nothingness.
For millions on Earth, the Christmas Eve television broadcast is the defining moment of Apollo 8. But for the engineers, and especially the astronauts, there's a critical maneuver just ahead that overshadows everything else.
I hear the words blaring out of the television, but I don't register a single one of them. I can't focus on anything but the numbed-out bliss Alex coaxes from me with each pump of his fingers.
Good girl. Good girl. That's it. Ride it. Ride it out.
My fingernails gouging into the wooden desk in front of me, I lock up, trembling, leaning into him as I come. The well of pleasure I descend into feels bottomless, but eventually, I reach its end. I'm too afraid to breathe for a second. I don't want to gulp at the air like I'm starving, but before long, I have no choice. I pull a thin trickle of air in through my nose, my body slowly falling slack against Alex's chest, and he purrs into my hair like a satisfied cat.
Damn, Argento. That was the hottest thing I have fucking seen.
He nuzzles into my hair, pressing a kiss against the damp skin of my neck, and I shudder one last time as he slides his fingers out of me. Everyone else in the room is silent, watching the television screen with boredom strewn across their faces. Not me, though. I'm too busy staring at Alessandro Moretti as he licks my cum clean from each one of his glistening fingers.
20. Alex. Come on, old man, you're embarrassing yourself. Harder. Come on, harder. Under any other circumstances, I would never dream of speaking to Cam like this. But desperate times call for desperate measures. He wants to be a part of the Jacob Weaving takedown crew, but I know for a fact he hasn't had to raise a fist to anyone his entire life. That much became painfully clear the first time he swung at the heavy bag hanging in his garage, and he nearly fucking missed. Silver had 3 guitar lessons queued up with her regular students after school today, so I grabbed the opportunity with both hands, putting her father through his paces during her absence. And let's just say it has not been pretty. Cameron gives me an irritated scowl as he lunges forward, jabbing at the bag like I showed him to. At least he's connecting properly with the damn thing now. That's something, I suppose. I doubt a hit from Cameron would put a man down on his ass, though. It's not as if the guy's unfit or anything. He's young, all things considered, and broad-shouldered. There should be nothing stopping him from sending the heavy bag suspended from his garage roof swinging for the rafters. But it isn't happening. There appears to be a problem, namely the fact that whenever Cameron Parisi pulls back his fist and sends it hurtling forward toward the bag, he doesn't fucking mean it. It's understandable. He hasn't seen the way Jake looks at Silver. He hasn't seen the smug, self-satisfied smile on the motherfucker's face as he traipses through the hallways of Raleigh like he fucking owns the place. If he'd caught one glimpse of Jacob's eyes crawling over Silver's skin the way I've caught them crawling, then he wouldn't be having this problem right now. I nearly gave myself a fucking aneurysm pretending that everything was okay at school today. I wanted nothing more than to hunt down that motherfucker and tear him limb from limb. But I didn't, for Silver's sake. She must have thought I was fucking crazy, skipping into physics like I didn't have a care in the world, and then making her come under her fucking desk. Yeah, I must have come across like a goddamn psychopath, but it was all I could do to distract myself from the chain of bruises that I knew were worsening under the high neck of her sweater. I have an old skiing injury, you know, Cam grumbles as he jabs at the bag. I dislocated my shoulder when Silver was 6. Comes out of joint if I'm not careful. The garage door's closed. There are 3 little element heaters pointed at us from Cam's barely used workbench, and the space has gotten surprisingly hot. We both shed our shirts about half an hour ago, and I've been trying not to stare at Cam's extraordinarily pale chest ever since. Not one tattoo on the guy, not a fucking one. Weird. I brace the heavy bag against my side, rolling my eyes. Do you know how ultra-privileged and ridiculous that sounds? Oh no, my old skiing injury. I can't possibly hit something hard, or all of my money will go flying out of my pockets. Cameron pauses, straightening up a little, a warning look on his face. Antagonizing him probably isn't the best way to plant myself firmly into his good graces. He arches his eyebrows at me, and I arch mine back. I am the king of the sardonic eyebrow arch. Cam's gonna have to practice some more if he wants to compete for the title. What? You want me to apologize? Will that make your old skiing injury hurt less? Jesus Christ, you're an asshole, you know that? He mutters darkly. What Silver sees in you, I have no idea. There we go, salty, salty Cameron. When he hits the heavy bag again, he puts a little more effort into it. Enough that I can actually feel the hit through the bag. Not enough to make me stagger back a step, but it's something. If I'm such an asshole, then why are you okay with me dating Silver in the first place? Cameron bares his teeth as he throws another punch at the bag. Silver's not like most kids her age. She's smart. She knows what she wants. She's also stubborn as hell. If I forbid her from dating you in a year's time, she'd be shacked up with you somewhere 50 miles away with a newborn keeping her up all damn night, and I'd probably never see her again. I'll admit, the mental image he paints throws me for a second. She'd never do that, I say. She is too smart for that. We'd never just take off and leave. We'd never wind up with a kid like that either. Why not? Cam asks sharply. You don't want children with her? I choke on a number of different responses to that question. The words are all bunched up at the back of my throat, stumbling into one another. If this is another test, like handing me a beer to see if I'll drink it in front of him, then I don't know what kind of warped, fucked up game this guy is playing, but I want out. Nothing I say here will ever be the right answer. It's getting real hot in here, I say through my teeth. Silver said you used to go to a Muay Thai gym on the other side of town. Why'd you stop? Cameron's eyes glitter as he drives a right hook toward the middle of the bag.
Shame you were so enthusiastic with all the ink. You could have been a politician later in life, the way you sidestep questions, Moretti. Quite the talent you've got there. What do you want me to say? Yeah, I want to knock up your daughter and fill an entire house with our kids. I'm 17. So's Silver. Neither of us are thinking about that right now. You're just thinking about getting your dick touched as often as possible. Consequences be damned, right? I feel his hit this time. I'm pretty sure Cam imagined the bag was my head on that last one. A spike of anger licks up the back of my neck, but I ignore it, shrugging it off. I'm used to people saying things to try and kindle my temper. Gary used to do it all the time. During the last few months under Quincy's roof, I probably would have unleashed on him and gotten in a few good hits if he'd said something like that to me. This time, with Cam, I'm not going to do that. He's so fucking worried about Silver, I'm betting he doesn't even know what he's saying half the time. I'm not going to talk to you about my dick, Mr. Parisi, I tell him. He stands up, straightening out his fighting stance again, wiping sweat from his brow with the back of his forearm. Back to Mr. Parisi, huh? Until we settle on another topic of conversation that doesn't make me think you might kill me, I think it's probably for the best. He huffs out a breath of air that I think is supposed to be laughter. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm being an asshole too. You must be rubbing off on me, Moretti. Come on, let's switch out. We both wrapped our hands before we started, so I'm ready to change up with him. Cam skirts around the bag, assuming the position I was just in. I lift my hands to my face, loosely fisted, raising my guard, and Cam laughs. Oh boy, I can see we've got some work to do here, haven't we? You need a bit of a wider, he begins to say. He stops trying to correct my stance with his half-baked Muay Thai knowledge when I unleash my first punch, pivoting at the ankle, knee, then hip, rotating, twisting, drawing power up through the floor, up through my body, and sending it snapping down the length of my arm as it impacts with the bag. Cam staggers back not one step, but two. He nearly crashes into the workbench behind him. Ugh, fuck! He groans, his surprised exclamation transitioning into a surprised curse word. I wasn't expecting that. Kind of the point, right? Take people by surprise when it matters. My loose, almost drunken style of fighting has shocked the hell out of more people than I can count. To this day, I've never lost a fight. I don't intend on losing any in the future either. Cam nods, panting a little as he goes back to hold onto the bag. Point well made, he says under his breath. He's not smiling anymore, not angry either. His emotions seem to have fallen out of him altogether. You know, this might be the end for you guys, don't you? He says quietly. If we do this, she might not forgive you for not listening to her. I chew on the inside of my lip for a second, turning that thought over in my head. I've already realized this. There's every chance Silver will never speak to me again once my plans with Cam have come to fruition. I know it, I say after a while. I've made my peace with it. I'll never be okay without her. But she'll be okay without me. She's stronger than I am. She'd be okay. And this needs to be done. I say nothing about Silver's murmured nightmares. I say nothing of all the other ways Jacob's assault is still affecting Silver. Sexually, even if she won't admit it. Cameron just nods as if he's noticed his own list of changes in his daughter, and he doesn't want to talk about those either. What about you? I ask. She's going to hate you too after we're done. Cam just shrugs, jerking his chin toward the heavy bag, indicating for me to hit it again. I'm different, he says. I'm her father. She can hate me all she wants. A daughter's supposed to hate her father sometimes. Eventually she'll forgive me, though. She won't have a choice. I'm her blood.
21. Silver. A ribbon of light spans from one end of Raleigh High Street to the other. Small yellow fairy lights twinkling everywhere, wrapped around the trunks of the trees, individually wrapped around their branches. The storefronts have all been decorated too. The edges of the windows in cafes, restaurants, and the boutique jewelry places alike have been frosted over with fake snow, and paper snowflakes have been taped and strung to the insides of the glass. I remember making those snowflakes as a child in elementary school, folding the paper into little triangles and carefully using the tips of my scissors to snick out little pieces along the edge, creating a pattern when the paper was unfolded. We'd make hundreds of them at Raleigh Elementary, writing our names carefully in the middle of our snowflakes in looping pencil. One of the teachers would then go around Raleigh and distribute the decorations to the local store owners, and the children of the town would be taken up and down the high street by their parents to peer into all the windows. We'd all squeal, delighted, when we finally found one of our own snowflakes in a window, displayed proudly, our names pressed up against the cold glass. Thomas Beekman, aged 7. Carly Harrison, aged 7. Leonie Alley, aged 6. Jason Press, aged 5.5. In the windows at Henry's, a little girl called Wendy Michaels has been honored 6 times, her small, delicate little snowflakes arranged in a circle right in the middle of the window. Alex takes in the winter magic of the high street, the sides of his Stan Smith's caked with the fresh snow that fell earlier this evening, and I find myself staring at him once again. His hands are driven deep into the pockets of his leather jacket. Every time he takes a breath, a billow of fog clouds the air, quickly rising up through the starry trees and disappearing into the night sky. The small bursts of golden light, like little fireflies, reflect in the darkness of his sharp, alert eyes, and in the waves of his almost black, swept-back hair. He looks around, studying the scene laid out before him, like he was just kidnapped by aliens and unceremoniously dropped onto the surface of another strange, unfamiliar planet. It startles me sometimes how madly, desperately I am in love with this person. The knowledge, the sheer depth and beauty of that love makes me smile to myself, basking in the warmth that's kindled in the hollow of my chest because of it. "You lived in Raleigh last winter, didn't you?" I ask. "Why didn't you come down here to see the lights then?" This is obviously the first time he's seeing them. His mouth works, lifting up at one side.
"I rode through a couple of times on the bike. There was less snow last year. I didn't stop, though."
Watching the people of our little town wandering up and down the street in front of us, arm in arm, bundled up in scarves, hats, and gloves, their cheeks reddened by the cold, he looks like he's trying to understand what's going on around him, but none of it quite makes sense. I suddenly realize what's going on in his head. He still feels so apart from all of this. He still doesn't think there's a corner of Raleigh's high street where he might fit in. I loop my arm through his, leaning my head against his shoulder as we make our way past Hardacre's grocery store and the Dillinger's pharmacy, nestling into him snugly, showing him that we're just like any of the other couples out to look at the lights. We reach the Regency Theater at 6:15. A little early to meet Ben, but Alex didn't want to risk being late. We sit on the wall out front, taking everything in as we wait for Jackie's silver SUV to pull up.
"Looks like the inside of a snow globe," Alex muses.
"You're so far away from the rest of town over in Salt and Ash. This must seem really quaint and weird in comparison to the trailer park."
"It does."
He frowns, lines forming between his brows. He seems lost in his thoughts. So lost that he doesn't even notice when Jackie's SUV arrives, rolling up along the curb outside the movie theater. I've met Jackie only once, when she picked up Ben from my house. I didn't even see her when she dropped Ben off at the hospital to visit Alex after he was shot, which has also seemed weird. I observe her as she gets out of the SUV and opens the rear passenger door for Ben, trying to see what I can figure out about the woman. No makeup whatsoever. Her mousy blonde hair is scraped back into a sloppy ponytail, and the long cardigan sweater she's wearing that goes down to her knees, seriously not warm enough in this weather, looks like it's coming apart at the seams. She's wearing mom jeans, and there are Uggs on her feet, a dark tide line rising up to her ankles where they've gotten wet. She looks harried and wary as she ushers Ben toward us, wrapping the cardigan sweater tightly around her slightly puffy frame, as if she's trying to use the cardigan as some sort of shield against us. She's left the SUV's engine running, which says a lot. She isn't planning on sticking around. By her side, Ben looks extra handsome in a black jacket with a pressed blue shirt underneath it. Alex grins when he sees Ben.
"Nice jacket, man," he says, brushing some imaginary lint from his brother's shoulder.
Looking sharp.
Ben beams. His brother's approval clearly means a lot to him.
Thanks. There was this really cool leather one at the store. Well, it wasn't real leather, but it looked just like yours. I would have preferred that one, but Mom said this one would be better.
Next to me, Alex tenses like he's just been electrocuted. His eyes whip up, boring into Jackie's face like twin lasers. He doesn't need to explain his reaction to me or to her. She's already avoiding making eye contact with him as she fusses over Ben's collar.
All right, Buster. I'll be back to get you at 9:30. I want you out front here, ready and waiting, okay? We've got an early morning tomorrow and it takes an hour to get home, so...
I would have picked him up and brought him back, Alex rumbles.
Jackie sighs. She sighs like she's dog-tired and sick of Alex's shit. I instantly hate her. I hate her for him.
That Camaro's a piece of junk, Alex. It would have broken down halfway back to Bellingham. I'm not having my boy waiting out on the side of the road when the weather's like this, while you wait for one of your loser friends to come and give you a...
Alex's jaw cracks loudly.
He's not your boy.
Jackie looks everywhere but at Alex. She accidentally makes eye contact with me and immediately shrinks away from it, disengaging. She fixes her attention on her watch.
All right, 3 hours, Ben. I'll see you soon.
She kisses the top of his head, turns, and leaves, getting back in the SUV and then driving off down the high street. Alex is a perfect storm, masterfully controlled, as he purchases the tickets to the movie. We head inside to buy snacks from the concession stand. Ben goes to the bathroom, and that's when Alex loses his fucking mind. He doesn't rage or shout, though. He's so, so quiet, which is far more worrying.
She is not his fucking mother,
he whispers, waiting outside the restrooms.
He is not her fucking son. How dare she tell him to call her that?
There's no way for me to comfort him here without drawing attention to the fact that he's fuming mad. Ben comes out of the restroom, and Alex plasters a broad smile on his face, jostling his brother, roughhousing as we make our way to the correct screen and find our seats inside. It's impressive how he can pretend like nothing's bothering him like that. It's all for Ben's benefit. Alex gets so little time with him that he doesn't want to ruin our evening, but I know how much he's hurting right now. I can still see it in his eyes, and it fucking kills me. The movie's terrible. It's blood and guts from the moment the opening credits scream across the screen. The violence doesn't stop until the movie ends on a brutal note. The last man standing finally losing his head as the psycho serial killer of the piece leaps out of the dark and takes a chainsaw to his neck. Ben is delighted. He pretends to chop and saw at the air the whole way out of the movie theater and all the way down the street to the diner. There's enough time for a milkshake and some fries before Jackie